You have been with us since the beginning of January, so we are in the middle of our Great Faith series, which we have two more weeks to go after this. Just a quick recap, we talk about how faith is a critical part of our lives, and First John wrote that, "For whatever is born of God overcomes the world, and this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith." Everybody say, our faith. Now, faith is critical to us living a victorious and overcoming life. Life is full of challenges, right? Life is full of problems, sicknesses, pressures, obligation, debts, conflicts, and that's what life is. But the differentiating factor between an overcoming and victorious life and a defeated life is that our faith. That we as believers, we have this advantage, is that we have this faith in a victorious God. We have this faith, and we know the outcome. We know what's on the other side of life. That is victory in Christ. So that's why it is very important to do a pulse check. You know how you guys go for medical check and check your pulse, the doctor check your pulse, and with one touch, they know whether you're healthy, you're having fever, you're not. So this series is kind of like a faith check. How is your faith today? How is your faith this season? Is it thriving? Is it surviving? Or is it dying? I hope not, okay? If it's dying, I hope that this series, you get together and you say, God, would you just revive and re-inject faith into my spirit, okay? So that's the recap. In Hebrews 11, author of Hebrew, we don't know who he or she was, okay? We don't know who the author was, but he was reminding the Christian at that time who was under a lot of pressure, under a lot of persecution, he was reminding them to hold steadfast to their faith. This book was written about 30 years after Jesus was crucified and resurrected. How many years? About 30 plus years, okay? And this is a time whereby potentially persecution of Christians is at the peak during the time of Emperor Nero. So a lot of Christians, Christ followers at that time, they were leaving their faith because of persecution, because of pressure, because of problem. And that's true even today. Right? You look at our world today. Our faith tends to fall away in times of pressure, in times of problem, and in times of persecution. Isn't that true? It is during transition time, it is during pressurizing time, it is during problematic times whereby our faith tends to waver and tends to fall away. And the author encouraged us to endure, to hold fast. And in the midst of that, in chapter 11, the author makes reference to all these ordinary but great faith women and men of God. In Hebrews 11, we call it Hall of Faith. And the author makes reference. Remember this guy, remember that guy, remember this guy. By faith, by faith, by faith. And this is what this series is all about. And we talk about Enoch some weeks back. We talk about how great faith derives from his great walk with God. How many guys remember that story that our faith is really a relationship? It is not a religion. It is not an obligation. It is not a to-do list. That it is, it's kind of nice to have a religion. No, it's not. Our faith, it's a relationship. It is a walk with God. And we spoke about Noah and the ark. Remember that? How his great faith demands great obedience. Can you imagine? Building the ark for 120 years. Waiting for this rain that has never happened. It only demands great obedience. And how flood came and God reset humanity. And today we're going to talk about this guy named Moses. Say Moses. From Noah, it's about 400 years to Abraham, and from Abraham, another 7 generations to this guy named Moses, okay? So, but it is still very early in the Old Testament, and his background you can find in Exodus chapter 2, you can find in Acts chapter 7 that talks about his early childhood, so you can read there. But today, we want to talk about Moses' choices. Moses' choices. Say Moses' choices. How his faith determines the choices that he made in his life. Who is this Moses? Moses is a prophet, one of the greatest prophets in the Old Testament. In fact, in the religion, Judaism, he is the most important prophet. Even in Islam, he is the most mentioned in Quran. He is Musa in Islam, is the most mentioned prophet in the religion of Islam. So Moses was a prophet. Secondly, he is a prince. How is he a prince? He is born in the time where the nation Israel was in slavery. All the people of Israel, they were slaves to the Egyptian. Okay, at that time, Egypt Empire was at its peak, and the whole nation of Israel, the people of Israel, were all slaves. And Moses was born, and eventually he ended up in the palace of the daughter of the Pharaoh, daughter of the king of Egypt. Adopted him, later we'll talk about that, and he was raised as a prince of Egypt. He was raised with all the resources, with all the trainings, with all the luxurious palace life. He was a prince of Egypt. He was also a leader. He led the people, the nation of Israel, to cross the Red Sea. He led them to the promised land, even though he didn't make it there himself, but he led the people of Israel through the desert and into the promised land. He was also the one that God spoke to him. He was in the mountain, and God spoke to him and gave him the Ten Commandments. Are you guys with me? So he wrote down the Ten Commandments on a tablet. So he was potentially the first man who downloaded from cloud onto a tablet, okay? So he was the man who God gave the Ten Commandments. So he was a leader. And finally, he was also an author. He wrote the first five books of the Old Testament, which is called the Torah, or it means the teaching, or Pentateuch. And this Torah, these first five books of the Old Testament, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, these first five books is also the main books of Judaism. So this Moses man is what we're going to talk about today. Moses' choices. You know, life is made out of choices that we made, right? You are who you are today because of the sum of the choices or the decisions that you make. Our tomorrow is the product of today's choices, right? Life is a journey full of choices, full of desires, and of course, with choices come dilemmas. Do we choose this? Do we choose that? Do we settle here? Do we settle there? Do we take this job? Do we take that job? Do we marry this person? Do we not marry this person? Life is full of choices, and the choices we make today determines who we are tomorrow. So the question is, what determines your choices? How do you make decisions? What makes you decide a certain way? Do you make decisions based on comfort, based on what's natural? Or do you make decision based on what is the most financially, most advantage when you decide to go for job B because it pays, you know, 150 ringgit higher? Or what determines the choices that you make? Is it family? Do you make choices because of family? Do you make choices because that's the way everybody lives? The lifestyle that everybody lives, therefore I choose also to live this way. Or do you make choices by putting yourself first? So the question is, for you to think about now, a couple of seconds, what determines your choices? What determines your choices? So today, as we talk about Moses, I hope that we will begin to see how his faith determines his choices. How his great faith determines his great choices. So today, we want to look at from the passage of Hebrews 11, verse 23 to 29, and we will see that great choices involve three things. Verse 23, by faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born. Why? Because at that time, the nation of Israel, they were growing in population. Remember, they were slaves to the Egyptian. But the population was just growing and growing and growing to a certain extent that the Egyptians were a bit threatened. It's like, wow, you know, the nation of Israel, the population is just growing exponentially and potentially will be threatened. So the king of Egypt, the Pharaoh, says, give them more work, give them more hard labor. But the more hard labor they give them, the more they grow. The king of Pharaoh says, every boy that was born, kill them. Okay, he told all the midwives of the Hebrew nation, of the Israel nation, every boy, kill them. If it's a girl, let them live. If you read Exodus, the midwives, they were Israelites, their faith, okay, they fear God rather than fear Pharaoh. And they decide to, even though it's a boy, they kept Moses. They didn't kill Moses. And here, Moses' parents decided to hide Moses for 3 months because they saw he was no ordinary child. And they were not afraid of the king's edict. They were not afraid of the king's instruction and commandment to kill a boy. Moses is where he is because of his parents' faith, because of the midwife's faith. And sometimes we are here today because of somebody else's faith. Some of you are here today because of your friend's faith that saw something in you, or your parents' faith, or your life group leader's faith that saw something in you, that they invest time, they invest their resources because they saw something in you. So his parents hide him. After that, as the baby grows older, it's hard to hide a big baby who is walking around. So they decided to go to the river Nile. Okay, the river Nile is the longest river in the world. Until today, it is the longest river in the world. They go to the river Nile, and Egyptians at that time, they worship the river, worshiping the god of fertility. Because the soil was very fertile by the river, they could do a lot of planting, they could do a lot of agricultural. So the Egyptians were worshiping the river Nile. So Moses' parents put baby Moses into the basket, okay, a papyrus basket, and then they let the river float down the river. And they knew that the Egyptians, the Pharaoh, the daughters, the people who are, you know, rich, they have this area by the river that they could bathe, they could do all their washing and bathing. Okay, so there is this area by the palace that is confined for the royalty, okay, the Egyptian royalty to bathe and whatnot. They knew that. So they pushed the basket down along the river, and the Pharaoh's daughter, which is the king of Egypt's daughter, she was bathing and she saw this baby and she took it as a good sign. Okay, she took it as a gift from gods. She took it as a good omen. If you are superstitious, especially religious culture, I believe the Egyptian worshipping a river now, they are very superstitious. So they saw this baby come down and she was overjoyed. She was saying, look, this is a baby. And this is a Hebrew baby, Israelite baby. And because the baby was so cute, and she decided to keep the baby. And Moses' elder sister was just at the riverbank. Obviously, the mom told the sister, go and follow the basket, okay? As the basket flows, and she was standing next to the riverbank, and she saw that now the Pharaoh's daughter is picking up the basket, and she asked, would you like me to find someone to take care of this baby? And the Pharaoh's daughter said, yes, I want this baby. Yes, can you please help me to find someone to take care of this baby, and I will pay her. Guess who Moses' sister finds to take care of the baby? The mom. Okay, so Moses' sister went to get the mom and came to the Pharaoh's daughter. I have found this woman who is willing to take care of this baby. And Pharaoh's daughter says, okay, you take care of this baby. I'll pay you and give it back to me when he is older. Can you imagine that? The surprise. How cool is that, right? Moses is supposedly being killed. Now he's not just spared, but he is being paid. His mom is being paid to take care of Moses. How cool is that? You see, when you make faith decisions, when you make faith choices, just be prepared to be wowed by God. Just be prepared to be surprised by God when you make faith choices that is out of the natural. But Moses' parents saw that Moses was no ordinary child. The first thing about great choices, it involves great realization. You have to see. You have to realize. You have to see beyond the natural. Yes, the king of Pharaoh issued a command to kill all boy. And if you are found with the baby boy, you yourself will be killed. Your life will be at risk. Yes, it involves that. But they realized, they saw beyond the natural. They saw beyond the natural to see that there is something about this baby. There is a calling that God has upon this baby. Do you see God's hand in your life? Do you see God's working in the midst of confusing situation? Do you see God's principle and values in the midst of conflicts, in the midst of problematic situation? Do you realize and do you see? The first thing about making great choices, making great faith choices, is that you have to first realize and see beyond the natural first, before taking the next. So after Moses grew older, and Moses' mother then went back to the palace and hand over, maybe he was, I don't know, 5, 6 years old, 4 years old, I don't know, and hand over Moses to the Pharaoh's daughter. And it was then, Moses was then being brought up as the prince of Egypt. Ate together with the king, ate together with the rest of the siblings. He was trained, he was educated. At that time, Egypt was the most modern empire. He was taught languages and writings and science and technology, how they built the pyramids and all that. He was taught how to fight. He was taught how to ride a horse. He was taught everything just like a prince. And he was, together the rest of his siblings, due to inherit really the empire of Egypt. That's why he's the prince of Egypt. Moses was a prince. But what happened after this? Okay, so Moses, when he was grown up, Moses made certain decisions. So second thing about great choices is that it involves great risks. Make no mistakes, great faith and great faith choices involve great risks. Was it risky for Moses' parents to hide Moses? That go against the ultimate dictator, ultimate ruler of king of Egypt? Was it dangerous? Yes, it was. But they choose to hide Moses. It talks about quiet private practice. It talks about quiet private practice, that making certain decisions. Sometimes it's about making a decision in your heart. Say, God, I'm going to honor you in this world. I'm going to honor you with this relationship. God, I'm going to honor you with my life. I'm going to honor you with my speech. I'm going to honor you with what I see. I'm going to honor you with my finances. It's that quiet private practice that sees you through. I work in a corporate world as well, beside pastoring a church. I'm a bivocational pastor. During prayer and fasting, it's a little bit challenging to avoid lunches with colleagues, right? Especially, hey, let's go for lunch. Or clients say, hey, you know, let's meet up for lunch. And it's a little bit tricky, okay, for that one whole week, Monday to Friday. But it is a quiet private practice that I say that, okay, you know what, I meet you guys for coffee, okay? I meet you guys for coffee. I have something to do over lunch. So 3 out of 5 days during our prayer and fasting week, I walk across my office. There was a O'Brien sandwich shop. It was quiet because nobody go there for lunch. I went there and just had my juice and read my Bible and pray. It's a quiet private practice. I don't announce to the world, hey, I'm fasting today. No. It is a quiet private practice. When I was a college student, there will be times whereby the rest of my housemate will be telling me, hey, why are you spending so much time going to church and reading the Bible? I would say, you know what, it's just what I do and just do it. And there were about 8 people in the house, so there's not much privacy. So whenever we read the Bible, it's somebody somewhere will be in your face, okay? Because that's just a life of a student house. I remember I decided to move my study table to the kitchen because the room was always noisy and the common living area, the TV is always on, the computer game is always on. Everything is just in a mess. So I moved my study table to the kitchen table next to a good friend of mine who bought a bench press. Okay, you know, they were into building muscles, and they bought a bench press and put it in the kitchen, and that bench press eventually becomes our clothes hanger, right? I remember that sitting there studying and reading the Bible, and people were just walking by and says, why are you doing this? I said, yeah, it's just what I do. It's okay, you know, I'll study later. I'll go out with you guys later. I'll go mama later. But sometimes when you make great choices, it doesn't have to be public. It is that quiet, private conviction that you made. You know what? I'm going to honor my marriage for the rest of my life. When I get married, I'm going to honor my wife with my eyes. I'm going to honor my wife with my body. It's that quiet conviction that you make. When you're in charge of finance, when you're in charge of a certain project at work, it's that quiet conviction. I'm going to do my best. I'm going to do this project. I'm going to handle the finance with fullest of integrity, for example. That's a quiet private practice. The question is, do you, in your daily decisions, do you make great choices? Secondly, Moses, when he had grown up, he refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh. Can you imagine? After the daughter of Pharaoh takes him in, after maybe, I don't know, maybe 10 years of living together in the palace, being accepted as one of their own, and he then says that, I refuse now to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. I don't think it's an easy decision for Moses, because he would have received love from the Pharaoh's daughter. He would have received love from his siblings, right? From his adopted siblings in the palace. But because of what he saw, his people was being mistreated. His people was in slavery, and he made this bold public stand. He refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And he chose, verse 25, that's the word, he chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He refused. You know, making great choices is not just a quiet private practice, but it is also sometimes a bold public stand. Moses risked not just the luxury of the comfort of palace, not just the luxury of the pleasures of lifestyle. I mean, he can have all the wine, all the women, all the treasures and everything, all the possession, but he refused, and he publicly refused to be known as Pharaoh's daughter because he was then identified with the people of the nation of Israel. It's a bold public stand. You know, sometimes great choices involves a bold public stand, even at the risk of different things. At the risk of, I don't know, reputation in our context. Maybe at work, the risk is the people calling you this religious person or this holy person. What are the risks when you make a bold public stand? I remember when, you know, my wife and I, we have been married for coming 13 years by March, okay? And I remember when we were dating and we set boundaries that we would not cross the line of intimacy until we get married. And I remember when some of our friends found out and they were like looking at us as if we were from 1800s or something, okay? So what is the risk? The risk is that people calling us old-fashioned, it's about making faith choices to make that public bold stand. And sometimes we have to make that stand, especially if you're in business, the way you do business and people are expecting kickbacks, expecting bribery as a common practice. Sometimes we have to make that stand and say that, no, this is not right. We don't have to quote scriptures, but we can just say this is not right. This is not the way business practice should be done, right? Sometimes it involves us making bold stand. Moses risked everything. Moses risked it all. Think about the other people in the Old Testament. Think about Queen Esther. She risked her life, right, when she said, this is my time that I need to speak up. If I die, I die. She said she was willing to make great choices, great faith choices, but it comes with great risk. She risked her life to go against, again, the king's order. What about people of Daniel and his friends when they stand for righteousness, when they refuse to bow to the idol? How they were at risk and they were being thrown to the furnace of fire, but God delivered them. But they say that we will not bow, and if we perish in the furnace of fire, we perish. Great choices always comes with great risk. But Jesus says this. Jesus says, whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. So let me share this with you. Potentially, we don't feel it so much in Malaysia. But following Jesus has risk. Think about our Christian brothers and sisters in other restricted nations, other persecuted nations. When they follow Jesus, they are being persecuted and pressured by their family. They face the risk of being disowned by their family members. They face the risk of being outcast by their community. But Jesus removed the eternal risk for us. Okay, you know what that means? Jesus removed the eternal risk. We, as believers of Christ, we know what is on the other side. We know what happens when we die and we meet God because of what Christ has done for us. And because Jesus has removed the eternal risk, Jesus called us to step out and take temporary earthly risk. The final risk is gone. We know where we will be at the other side. In the meantime, while we are on earth, Christ called us to take risks for kingdom purpose. But most of the message that we hear every Sunday, that we hear from the podcast, is not about taking risks. It's not about living for God. It is often about blessings. What can be more blessings for us? What can help us be better? How can we have more comfort? It's all about consumer kind of faith. But it is also about suffering for Christ. This is what Jesus says. Whoever will lose their life, who save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. There's this scholar by the name of Stephen Neal, and he said this about the early church, which means that the first and the second generation of Christians. These are the people, the first and second generation of Christians. That means first generation after Jesus, right? And he said this, he says, every Christian in the early church knew that sooner or later he might have to testify to his faith at the cost of his life. That's why in Romans chapter 10, verse 8, Paul was saying that, how do you be saved? You confess with your mouth and believe with your heart that Jesus is Lord and you will be saved. Yeah, for us, that's easy. Oh, I confess with my mouth, I believe in my heart that Jesus is Lord and I am saved. Yes, that's true. But in those days, in the books of Romans, in those days, they are living in Roman Empire, right? So they will go around in the marketplace, they will go around the city and they will greet each other, they will greet the centurion, the guards of the Roman soldier. They will meet each other and they will bow to each other and they will say, Caesar is Lord. Like Julius Caesar, Caesar is Lord. And they say, yes, Caesar is Lord. Peace, go. And they will see someone, an official, they will say, Caesar is Lord. But when these Christians, when they come to know Christ, they believe in their heart and they confess that no longer Caesar is Lord. And when they meet some officials, some soldiers, they will say, you know, hello, good morning. You know, Jesus is Lord at the cost and potentially at the risk of their lives. So for them, when they believe and when they confess, they are at risk and it potentially will cost them their lives. So today, how do we then apply to this? Think about your Christian walk. Has it been too safe? Are there things in your life that God has called you to step out? Sure, it involves risk. You know, starting this church 12 years ago, it was a risk. I was 27 years old. You know, I was leading the team. It was a risk for Pastor Timothy sending out a clueless young guy to start a church. God bless those who are with me for the first 1-2 years. It was a risk, right? Emotionally, relationally, I have many good friends in Every Nation Church Malaysia, a church that I was with for a good 12 years. I have many close friends there. But it was a risk for me to uproot relationally and start all over. To start all over, to build new relationships. It was a risk when we have our kids, Kristen and Alex, kid Ryan, we were the first two children in the children ministry. It was a risk because we don't have a kids ministry. And you see, we have just 25 minutes away. We have a great, thriving kids ministry. And you look at kids ministry and you thought, is my children missing out? But it was a risk. But, you know, great faith choices involves risks. And those are the risks that we take. And God honor those risks. It was a risk to pioneer a church from scratch when we have, you know, a great environment, great, you know, just 20 minutes away. We're not talking about 2 hours away, right? It was a risk. 2015, September, I felt that my Christian walk was getting a little bit too comfortable. I thought, maybe this year I need to go for a mission trip. We went 10 days mission, led a team to Nepal, and it was a risk to plan for the trip and to take time off from busy schedule at work and church and, you know, just go for a mission trip and to see what God has in store for me. And time and time again, God calls us to take risks, sometimes small risks, sometimes big risks. I remember coming back from Every Nation School of World Mission when I was 24 years old and telling my parents that I'm not going to go back to the corporate world to work and I'm going to work full-time in church for a while. And I risk their heartbrokenness. My parents are not a believer yet. I'm still praying for them. They wouldn't disown me, but they were literally heartbroken. Their oldest son, their hopes, you know, work for church and they didn't understand. Of course, today it's a whole different story. But at that time, I knew that was what I needed to do and it was great risk for me. As we plan to start a second service in April, it was a risk as well, right? A small risk of comfort. I mean, we can just be happy and see each other every single week and you know me and I know you. Why do we need a second service? But you know what? It's risk. When we step out in faith, it always involves risk. The question is, what are some of the choices that God is speaking to you and wanting you to make? But you know it involves risk. But great faith choice involves risk. So the first thing is realization, the second thing is risk, and the third thing is another R, is reward. What did Moses do? Moses regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt. Okay, these treasures are like, you're talking about silos and silos of gold, okay? You're talking about gold and diamond, those kind of real treasures. But he regarded this grace for the sake of Christ, from a prince to a slave. He regarded that as a greater value than the treasures of Egypt. Because why? Because he was looking ahead to his reward. He was looking at eternal treasure. He was not looking at earthly treasure. He was looking at spiritual legacy and not earthly fame. If he were to choose to stay behind to be a prince of Egypt, potentially we would not hear this name Moses. He would not be the main Pharaoh because he has other brothers and sisters, right? He would live a comfortable life. He would have been very rich. But he chose to look ahead to his reward. The third thing is that great choices often involves great reward. And not always it is earthly reward. We always like to hear testimony about, you know what, I honor God, I honor God with my business, and I tithe, and I start tithing after 1 year, God tripled my business. We all like those kind of testimony, right? How many guys like that kind of testimony? I like that kind of testimonies. When we honor God, when we start our second service, this service is just, two services is just full when God honors. We all like that kind of testimonies. Those are great. But the real reward is eternal reward. It's heavenly reward that we need to look ahead. He sees the eternal. He sees the invisible. The eternal crown that Paul was talking about in the New Testament. He says, run your race with perseverance. He says, run your race with diligence, because you will receive your eternal glory. You will receive your reward. You will receive your prize at the end of your race. When we die one day and meet God and give an account for our lives, and God can welcome us and honor us and says, here is your eternal reward. So Moses saw and he was willing to risk it all. The question is, what about us? What about you? You know, I have a video that I saw some time back. Imagine with me a gymnasium beam here, right? You guys know what a gymnasium beam is, when they walk on that beam? Olympics gymnastic, they will do flips and back flips and triple back flips. Let me show it to you. I'm just kidding. They will just do those flips, and at the end of the beam, then they will jump off, and then they will come off to the ground, and then ta-da, and then they'll turn to the other crowd, and ta-da, and then turn the other side, and ta-da, and then the judge will give points, right? You remember that? The judges will give them points, 9 out of 9, 10 out of 10, 8 out of 10. The judge will give them points. And that's what we know, right? But sometimes our Christian walk, as we walk on that beam, imagine our Christian life is that beam, and we will be like sitting down and crawling and be so safe and say, I'm going to just stay comfortable in my Christian walk, and I'm just going to stay put. And go to church a little bit, and pastor asked me to serve. Okay, I'll serve once a month, and give. Okay, I'll give a little bit, and I attend life group. Okay, that's all. God don't ask me to do anything else, and we will be so safe. And at the end of our lives, we jump off the beam and we go ta-da. You know, if we see that kind of gymnast Olympics and they jump off, what do you expect the judge to write? Right? What do you expect the judge to write? But sometimes we live our Christian walk, and at the end of our lives, we jump off and ta-da! And then we face the ultimate judge, God. What do you expect God to? Well done, my servant. So sometimes when I saw that video, I looked at myself and said, man, am I being faithful of the calling that God has for me? Just like Moses, do I make choices which is of faith that involves firstly a realization of who God is, a realization of God's kingdom, and it involves risk on earth, but we know the ultimate eternal risk has been taken away, mitigated by Jesus. And finally, it involves our reward in heaven. Lastly, verse 29, by faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land. We know the story. But verse 29 is the transition between Moses and the people. Your faith choices always impacts people. Your faith choices always impact generations of people that come after you. You may not know it, but when you came to know Christ and when you say, I'm going to lead my family in the way of the Lord, that faith impacts your children, your children's friend, your children high school friend, your children college friend, and your children's children, and it impacts a whole generation to come. When you great faith and decide, in my office, I'm going to honor God. In my business, I'm not going to do hanky-panky. I'm not going to do things which are not right. Guess what? Your faith always impacts people around you. I want to encourage you all to do this. As I end today, begin to just open up your heart to God. Thank you for your word, Lord. God, I pray that today, even as we learn from Moses, I pray, God, Lord, that we will learn to make faith kind of choices. That we will not be ashamed. That we will stand firm in the midst of pressure. We will stand firm when it comes to our relationships, when it comes to our marriages, when it comes to our life, when it comes to how we spend time and money, how we look at the world. I pray, God, Lord, that we will then hold firm and we will decide that, God, I'm going to make great faith choices. I'm going to allow faith to determine my choices. I'm not going to allow my pleasure, my comfort, the world. I'm not going to allow greed. I'm not going to allow money, family to determine my choices. But I pray, God, Lord, let faith, let great faith drives and shape our decisions.